Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about why self-love is important. Why even care if you are engaging in this cultivation of self-love? Well, the first thing is that it's better for you and for your relationships. But you can't give what you don't have. Okay? You cannot give what you don't have. And the only way we truly have something is if it's a part of us. It's intrinsic to us. Something that exists inside of me. So people can take away my job, but they can't take away my skill set. No one can take away how should I do psychology from me, because now I have it. But they can take away my job. Just like people can stop loving you, they can leave you, they can go away. But if you love yourself, then the love stays, even though the people might come and go from your life. So when you rely on someone too much outside of you to give you love, that love is, there's always going to be that insecurity there, that love could go at any point. And then we do all kinds of shenanigans in engaging with all types of controlling behaviors to make sure that that person does not leave. And when, so we can't give what we don't have, and you can't have what is not intrinsic, okay, truly have. And what happens in your relationships, we all have these needs, the need for love and how love is expressed. We all have that need. We all want to be seen. We all want to be heard. We all want to feel nurtured. We all want to feel like we belong. I want to feel like a good person. I have that need. And if I am not meeting those needs, those loving needs, those self-care needs, then I am going to get that from somewhere in my life. You know, when I was expecting, when I was pregnant, and I was like, oh, I don't have an appetite, I don't know how to eat. And the doctor was like, you know, this kid's gonna get it from somewhere. It's gonna go to your bones if it has to, but it's gonna find a way to get what it needs. So I was like, okay, well, that's comforting that at least that part of me is getting what it needs, but then it would be taking away from me, right? And then I'm weak, and then my brain is fogged, and. So when you have this part of you that has these needs, you are going to get them met. And you're probably going to get them met from another person. And that other person, of course, they are in a contract with you, whether it's a friendship or whether it's a marriage or any type of relationship, they are contracted with you to be in that relationship, right? You've got like a verbal agreement that I will care for you and you will care for me. However, if I am the only person caring for you and you are not caring for you at all, then that places too much of a burden on me. And if we are two adults who are choosing each other, whether we're friends, whether we are partners, I have a responsibility to me as much as I have a responsibility to you in this loving relationship. And in order for me to love you, one way that I best love you is to love myself. Because then I relieve you of that burden to carry fully. We all have to carry each other's burdens, by the way. I'm not saying just do this for yourself and no one will ever do this for you. I am saying you have to do it for each other and you have to do it for yourself. And that's the only way the balance remains. And there are times where you are compromised, you are grieving, you are experiencing some sort of distressing situation, and then that responsibility of caring for you may be more on the other person, but it cannot go on like that. It is not a sustainable relationship if it just goes on and on and on like that. So we have to take responsibility for our love and our loving needs And that frees the other person to be able to do that for themselves as well. Another thing why love is important, why self-love is important, is that when we have self-love, we have more compassion for the other person. Now, when you love yourself, and we'll get into what that really means, inherent in that is a deep acceptance for all that you are. You cannot love what you don't know. And there are parts of you you don't know, and sometimes they come out and you shame them or you critique them and you push them back in to the shadow, and then you go on thinking you love yourself, but there's this part of you that you are absolutely denying. You cannot love and deny the same thing. So when you start to integrate that, and I've told you guys, go through my posts earlier, when you are, when you start to integrate all that you have shamed yourself for, blamed yourself for, judged yourself for, critiqued yourself for, it cannot integrate without compassion. And when you have compassion for yourself, it's very rare that you will not have compassion for someone else. Like I said, you can't give what you don't have, and what you have just naturally flows out of you. So if I have compassion for myself, like, oh man, like, I really messed up there, like, I need to sort that out. I need to go ask for forgiveness. But not, oh my God, you're such an idiot. What were you thinking? Okay, nope, that's not compassion. But to say, yeah, you messed up, honey. We're going to have to work that one out. And we're going to have to go apologize. And we're going to have to make that right. And how are you going to remember not to do that again? But you're human. It's okay. You made a mistake. Like, this is showing yourself that, yeah, I'm still holding you to the highest standards, because that's one of the things that really stops people from being self-compassionate, is that, well, I'll let myself go. No, you don't need a drill sergeant in your head to hold yourself accountable. You can be a firm, kind, gentle person and still hold yourself accountable. You are now an adult. What you needed when you were little, which was a little bit more harshness maybe, which we didn't need actually really when we were little, but that's maybe just the way the world was communicating to us. We don't need that anymore. Yes, my inner critic served me for a very long time, and I thank you. I would not be who I am today if it was not for my inner critic. So I will not banish you, and I will not deny you, and I will not degrade you or vilify you. You were just critical, and you were harsh, and you got me to this place. But now I'm telling you that I can now hold myself to the same standard, my same high values, my same standard of excellence, without the harshness. So I will hear what you have to say, but please say it nicely. We'll talk about that at the end. So when you have this way of being with yourself, there is no other way but to be that way with other people. And then what happens is that there is inner peace, you know, that this Kung Fu Panda kind of inner peace. Like, for me, this is like, how do I get there? Inner peace can only be when all parts of you and how you exist in the world is a peaceful way. And if you are judging yourself, you are surely judging other people. If you are critiquing yourself, you are surely critiquing other people. And if you are harsh with yourself, then the world will be a harsh place also. So when all of that shifts inside of you, only love flows and compassion flows out of you also. So that is why self-love is important. So you can have inner peace. That it actually is the path to inner peace. And I laugh because it sounds so simplistic, but it may sound simple, but it ain't easy to get to that place. And you have to go through the hero or heroine's journey to get there. But there will be less aggression, less blame, less judgment. And then there's peace and there's love inside of you. So let's now talk about what is self-love. I can't tell you how many questions I got. Can there be too little love and there can be too much love? How can I love myself and love other people? How can I choose myself first? How can I mean all different varieties of basically the same question, which is, what is love, really? And I think we often, we often confuse self-love with many things, whether it's selfishness, self-indulgence, self-absorption, self-achievement, and self-importance. So we confuse self-love with all of this. And for the person who is asking me to speak louder, this mic is not attached to my phone. It's attached to my laptop. I don't think anyone else is having an issue with the sound, or I probably would have heard it from someone else, but this is as loud as it gets. Next time I'll try to think of getting a mic for the phone as well. But in a world where so many people seem so self-absorbed, in a world where so many people are just self-oriented, it seems that way at least, in a world full of selfies and, you know, marketed self-love and self-care, and it just feels like everything is about self, we confuse self-love with self-indulgence and self-absorption and selfishness. And someone asked me, can there be too little or too much love? And I actually don't know how to answer that question, because love is, it just is. It cannot be, or, you know, it cannot be too much or too little. It just exists. And it can be expressed too little, but I'm not sure if it can be expressed too much. You know, I work in a mental health clinic, and every day we are getting phone calls from people who have lost someone that to death, lost someone due to something else, some other life circumstance. And I can't say that at the end of my life that I will ever regret that I love too much. I don't think that will be a regret. And that actually has been, there's a book written by a nurse who did, you know, palliative care, end of life care. And most people said, I wish I spent more time with my family. I wish I told people that I loved them. I wish I loved harder, not worked harder. Like, nobody says, oh, I wish I finished that project. I don't think anybody says that. And it would really be a minority of people that do. But there isn't anything as too much of that. And you might have to ask the people in your life, how would you like me to express love to you? Because your language of love is different from their language of love. And I might not want physical affection. And if my children want physical affection, then that might feel too much for me. If they're all there, you know, clingy and loving, and, you know, that might be too much for me. But it might not be too much for them. So looking at how the other wants love expressed is going to be very important also. So that was one question. And another thing people say, well, you know, I do too much for other people and not enough for me. And how do I put myself first? And I would say, I think if you're thinking about putting yourself first, you might continue to get delayed in this journey of self-love, because I cannot put myself first. I put myself also, but if I have children in my care, I gotta take care of those children because they're in my care. I am also putting myself in the frame of people that I need to take care of, But there are times where they are being cared for. Yes, when the oxygen mask falls, you must put it on yourself and then put it on the other person. But that's so you can take care of the other person. If my child is crying and I have one plate of food, yeah, I'm going to make sure that I give them food and then I take enough for me to survive, right? So don't think about first or second and, you know, fourth, who's going to get love at what, you know, in what rank. It's how do I put myself also in the list of people that need to be nurtured, in the list of people that need to be taken care of, in the list of people that need to be fed and that need to sleep and that need to experience joy and playfulness. Like we set up play dates for our kids, make a play date for yourself. Like, do you need play dates too? And you need joy too. And you need laughter too. It's not just them. And I would also like to say that sometimes people think that they are loving someone, but they're really not. And I have seen this way too many times. And I can say at one point in my life that I probably loved like this too. And that did not change until I experienced a love that was very healing and I was able to love myself. So sometimes people think that they're loving another person, but it's really coming out of a place of a wounded place. If I love you, you will stay. If I give you more, you won't go. It's a form of control that is cloaked in niceness and loving gestures. But truly underneath that, there is a wound and there is this clinginess of, let me just give you this so you don't go away. And if it's coming with that energy, then it is not love. It is coming out of a wounded place. So this is why in all the traditions and religions, it will say that intention is everything. Because if you start with the intention of, I want to love this person, then sometimes the best thing to do is to let that person go. You know, I had to make a difficult decision to let my son go to boarding school. Like, what? You know, and it kind of was sprung onto me. And I know I posted about this last week because he came back from boarding school. And some people were like, oh my God, why would you send your kid to boarding school? Don't they need you? And don't they? And of course, all sorts of judgment came my way. But what most people didn't ask me was, did your son want to go to boarding school? And he did. He came to me and said, it is very expensive. It is very far. It's in France. And I really want to go because this is my dream. Sorry. And it was probably one of the hardest things that I had to do was to say, okay, you're 15. I have taught you right from wrong. I have taught you how to pray and how to have a relationship with God. And I have taught you how to be a good person. I hope you remember all of those things. And now I'm going to let you go pursue your dream. That was hard for me. And so, but that was love. Because I was able to say, I am going to do what you want in this moment. Obviously, I'm not going to like send him off to like Mars, but within reason, he's in care. He's being, you know, had to go see the place, etc. And when all of those boxes were ticked off, then I said, okay, now you go and you follow your hero's journey and see where it takes you. And so it is about loving the other person. It is not about controlling the other person. It is not about changing the other person into being what you want them to be. And sometimes that means you have to hurt, because that's what, when they say love hurts, that's what it means. It is hard for me to be away from my husband, who travels many times, you know, for weeks at a time, or my son, who is far away. But in loving them, I'm saying you pursue your dream, and they would do the same for me. And so this is what love looks like. So self-love is not about controlling yourself. It is not about denying yourself. It is not about martyring yourself. And it is not selfish. It is about honoring parts of you that all want to live. And hopefully you have those people in your life that will encourage that too. So that's what love is. And I think that's because we haven't gotten that kind of love, we don't know how to give that kind of unconditional acceptance and encouragement to ourselves either. So what is selfish? Selfishness is where you do not consider another person, and you chiefly, excessively, exclusively care about yourself above all and without none, right? And nobody else competes. There's you and only you. That's really what selfish is. And when we say things like, oh, she loves herself too much, I don't know if that's love. She might be thinking about herself too much. She might be absorbed by the way she works or looks or whatever else that we are using this thing. We say it in such a sort of condescending way that, oh God, she loves herself too much. It's never a positive way. No one ever came and said, you know, she has so much love for herself. Like, no one ever said that in a positive light. So again, we equate self-love with selfishness. And so what is love? I think I talked about that. How do you define love? How do you show love? Loving someone means you accept them and encourage them to be fully who they are. And that means that's what you got to do for yourself. Sure. You must hold yourself to the highest values, but you are forgiving and supportive when you fall short of those, of living those values. So in parenting, we have different parenting type models, right? And we have where you have high expectations and low support. And we call that authoritarian parenting. Then we have high support and low expectations, and we call that indulgent parenting. And then we have high expectations and high support, and we call that authoritative parenting. This is what we want. We want high expectations and high support. I have extremely high expectations of myself and of my children, and I'm going to give them a high level of support. What does support mean? That means that, you know what? You got to understand that sometimes we all make mistakes, and sometimes we all do things that we're not really proud of. How are you going to deal with those mistakes? Do you have a way to deal with mistakes? You know, you're supposed to have like policies within a company, and dealing with mistakes and failures is a policy that every company should have. So how do you in a family deal with mistakes and failures? Once, mistake, okay, twice, mistake, three times, now we got a pattern. This is no longer a mistake. Now we need to go in and we need to sort this out, because you keep making the same mistake again and again, and that equals a pattern. So mistake is one or two. Pattern we've got to work on, and we got to get underneath that. Why is it that you're repeating this behavior? What, you know, and then we can sort of deconstruct that and get underneath that. But just to be like, oh, you're punished. Punishment is not going to teach me anything. It's just going to make me be afraid of you. But punishment, actually, the research will show it, that it doesn't teach us. Because I really need to understand why I keep making the same mistake again and again. You know, when my children were moving through their hormonal cycles, I have three teenagers. I was like, listen, man, one outburst, okay. Second outburst, okay. But now it's like, we're having like daily outbursts. Like, I get it. You're going through all types of body changes. But I know I've been through those body changes, and I've gone through that even during pregnancies. Like, you almost don't have any control over yourself. But you do have control over yourself, because you wouldn't do that in school. You wouldn't do that to your teacher. You wouldn't do that to your soccer coach. So why are you doing it to me? So we got to work on that. So how do we figure out that you can regulate yourself when you are at home, right? So this is how we start to deconstruct, rather than shaming them and blaming them. And it usually worked, that you're going to start to feel a rumble before the big eruption happens. Get out when the rumble is coming, so you don't hurt anyone, and you don't really, you know, hope you don't fall short of your own standards that you have for yourself. Like, respect yourself by leaving when the rumble comes. And we can ask to be excused at any point, and we will not be forced to stay. So this is, I don't know how I got onto that topic, but yeah, high expectations, high support. So just because you are being compassionate with yourself, just because you're being kind to yourself, just because you're being gentle with yourself, does not mean you are a pushover. You still have to set the bar high for yourself and hold yourself accountable every time you don't reach that bar, and say, what happened there? If I am holding myself to honesty and kindness and compassion and generosity, then why am I not behaving in that way? And what's getting in the way of me not behaving in that way? And coming at it just like that, rather than, oh my God, you are the most selfish person. No, we don't need to do that. That does not need to happen. It needs to be just, all right, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. That's it. All right. So that's self-love, holding yourself to the highest of values. And that requires discipline. And self-love, one component of self-love is self-discipline. And self-discipline is doing what is right for you versus, you know, what feels good in this moment. You know, I used to have a magnet, which I got rid of very quickly, that said, you know, somebody had given it to me. There was like a set of magnets, you know, these quotable quotes, and you stick them on your fridge. And it said, do what makes you happy. And I had a four-year-old, and I remember going to him and saying, all right, Ismail, you need to go to school, okay? And he's like, I don't want to go to school. And why don't you want to go to school? Like, what's happening? He's like, well, look at that. On the magnet you put, it says, do what makes you happy. And that doesn't make me happy, so I don't want to do it. And I was like, oop, there goes that magnet. We are not going to be talking about that. And I think that's the world that we live in this idea of, like, you should be happy all the time. Uh-uh. Sometimes you are doing things that don't make you very happy. Yesterday, as you guys all saw, I had to start gym again. And yes, it's good for me, and it really does make me feel good in the end. But beginning is not so easy. And some days I'd rather just like lay in bed and like stare at the wall, right? And I'd rather not. But you get up, and that's not because I'm exhausted. I just don't want to do it. Like, I just don't want to do it. That's the part of me that's saying, I don't want to do this. All right, sweetheart, come on up. We're going to go. We're going to do it for as long as you can, but you still got to show up. And then when you show up, then you do it. So this is about happiness. This is happy. Okay, so happiness is like a long game, guys. It's not like the short moment thing. Of course, there's moments of pleasure and you need those things, but I'm talking about discipline. And in order to be truly happy, sometimes you have to walk the tough road. You have to do tough things. You have to be disciplined with yourself. You have to say no to sugary things and yes to healthy food, even though that might not feel very good in that moment. Next thing is self-care. That's another component of self-love, too often confused as the only thing that exists when it comes to self-care. That, oh, you know what? I know I have to work today, but I'm going to engage in some self-care. It's like, no, when you have to work, you've got to work. Like, you're an employee and you've got to show up for work. You can do self-care later, but like, you can't not go to work. This is what I mean. Expectations, support. No, you can do self-care another time. But when you've got to go to work, you've got to go to work. And what you are contracted to do at work, you've got to show up and do it with all of your heart. Because that is a commitment you have made with your signed document that says, I have made this commitment. So show up and do your work. And then do self-care. So self-care is, how do people care about yours? Like, how do I care for myself? Imagine I gave you a child and I said, take care of your child, of this child. How would you take care of this child? You would say, are you hungry? Let's go out and play. We got to get food in. We got to get movement in. We've got to get play in. We've got to make sure they sleep at a good time. We've got to make sure they do something fun. We've got to, you know, give them some treats every now and then. Like, this is how you care for a child, right? Just do that for yourself. Very simple, guys. Did you eat today? Huh? Did you sleep well? If not, then get that in order. Did you do something that brought you joy today? Did you celebrate your achievements? That's it. That is self-care. And in a broad sense, it is self-acceptance. And it's a way of being with yourself that is kind, compassionate, gentle, nurturing. It's a way of being. I cannot tell you how incredibly harsh my inner critic was. It's still there. And when I do something new, it kicks on really loudly. I have a critic. It's not as harsh as it used to be. But the work of self-love involves self-forgiveness. It involves self-compassion. It involves self-understanding. It involves all of these things that I mentioned as a way of being with oneself. But you have to do until you be. That's how it happens, right? When we're first learning to drive, we're like checking the mirrors, hands on 3 and 9. Like, this is how we drive. But then we do driving so much that we don't even know how we got home and what we did. Like, it becomes automatic. So you do self-love until it becomes the way you are. So, and that can take considerable effort of getting to know yourself. So what are the blocks of self-love? Well, number one thing that I'm going to say is self-awareness. I could not get to a place of self-love, no matter how many books I read about love and no matter how many products I bought that promoted self-love, if I did not have self-awareness, period. I will come to that. Let's just go into that right now. Because if you have low self-awareness, you are highly susceptible to other people's opinions of you, as well as your inner negative talk that you have just created because of all the messaging that you have gotten from every institution, including media out there, about what is good and what is bad and what is shameful and what is not. Like, it has created a very negative self-talk, limiting beliefs, harsh way of being with oneself. So if you are not self-aware, you are going to be more susceptible to that. And if you are not self-aware, you are... No, so let me take that back. When you are following your own truth, when you are following your own dreams, the hero or heroine's journey, on the outside to the world, it looks like you are being selfish. My ex-employer, before I started working, not working, before I started the Lighthouse, told me I was selfish. Okay? Because I was leaving him to go do this. Okay? I'm sure when Moses went up the mountain and like sort of disappeared for however many days, people were like, man, that's selfish. Like, where did he go? Right? He left us. Or when Muhammad went into the cave many, many times over the course of his, you know, prophethood, there were people that he left behind. I'm sure his uncle thought he was selfish because he said something that the uncle didn't believe in. So when you choose your own path, be sure that someone will call you selfish. But remember, the definition of selfishness is exclusively and excessively self-oriented, okay? In and with the lack of consideration for anyone else. I can consider everyone in my life and still choose my dream. And I'm saying, I'm going to be considerate of you. I'm going to tend to you. I'm going to let you know that I'm leaving. I'm going to let you know that I'm studying. I remember when I was going through my master's and my doctorate while having kids, I can't count how many people said I was selfish because I was not home with my kids all the time. And I'm sure, I mean, this is what judgment is, right? When stay-at-home moms judge working moms, and when working moms judge working, everybody's judging everybody because their idea of what is true and right is not what the other person wants. But usually the judgment goes in the direction of the working mom is selfish while the stay-at-home mom is selfless. But maybe that's what she wants. Maybe it's actually selfish that she's taking care of her kids, because that's what makes her feel good, if that's the basis that we're judging people as selfish or not. So if you don't know yourself, I knew myself. I had no choice. When the call comes, I must. It's like it drives me crazy, right? And so I had to do this. I had to go. There was a depression, there was anxiety, there were all types of things. I was not like, I'm going to go start the Lighthouse. No, it was a very tumultuous time in my life, extremely difficult time in my life. I had three little kids. I was a single mom. I was really, really scared. So there was no, you know, on the yellow brick road going off to the Lighthouse. It was hard, hard for me. And I had to follow that, because there was no other, it felt like I had no choice when the calling comes. It feels like that to me. So it didn't feel very selfish to me. I felt like I was being driven mad by this, you know, calling that I had. So, and sometimes it can be that you look like you are being selfish, but you are not. That's why it's so important for you to have self-awareness and to know the definition of selfishness, and also to know that sometimes you are going to do things that are going to offend people in your life in some way as you follow your truth. And someone asked me about self-betrayal. If I had not left my ex-employer and started the Lighthouse, that would have been a betrayal. I cannot betray my truth. It literally takes the life out of me to do that, and I become a shell of a person. I've tried it, trust me. I've tried to martyr myself for many people and causes, and I cannot. The truth takes me where it takes me, and I must follow. So intention matters, self-awareness matters, and you have to know when you are being selfish. And you know what? I am selfish sometimes. Let me tell you when. When my self-care is on the low, I can be really selfish. You know, there are times where I'm like, I don't really care if you guys don't like Japanese. We're going to go eat at a Japanese restaurant because I want to eat Japanese. And I'm sure you'll find something there that you like. That is me being selfish. Because you know what? Sometimes you just got to eat what you want to eat. And you guys figure it out. That is me excessively and exclusively thinking about myself without consideration for anyone else. So sometimes when my self-care is low and my patience is low and I feel like I have not tended to myself, it does come out on other people in this form. So, but that's why you have to make sure that you are taking care of yourself and nurturing yourself all week long so you don't take it out on other people and your restaurant choices. So another block to self-love is comparison culture. Literally at the odds. Compare, accept. You know, one is about accepting oneself, one is about comparing oneself. You can also compare yourself to someone else and say, well, I wonder how she does that. As long as you are accepting of yourself, as long as you're using that to inspire yourself. But even if you say, well, I wish I could be like her, no, now you are not accepting yourself because you are not like her and I am not like her and she is not like me and we are all who we are and we just have to be who we are and be better at who we are. And so if someone looks at me and says, oh my God, I don't know how she does all of those things. I want to do all of those things. Please don't. Or if someone says, if I look at, you know, I grew up with a mom who was a stay-at-home mom and she was a Jedi of a stay-at-home mom, okay? So she was a master of stay-at-home moms. And if I compare my motherhood to her motherhood, oh my God, am I falling short of that? But she is the mother that she is, and I am the mother that I am. And this is the importance of differentiation and individuation and self-awareness, that I have to be the version of the mother that I can be, not the version of the mother that everyone else is. And I just have to be the best version of that mother that I can be. So comparison culture, it feeds perfectionism, it feeds anxiety, it feeds depression. Then there's also, very closely linked to that, is unrealistic standards of beauty and of success. We always used to have unrealistic standards and we always used to have social comparison. It's human beings, we are social beings, and as social beings, we have social comparison. It's like, it's not like, oh guys, this just came on when social media came on. No, it actually has been as old as time. We will compare ourselves. However, now it's like on another level. It is like out of this stratosphere type of comparison, okay? Like we are really, really obsessively and all day long in one way or another, comparing ourselves to someone else. And those someone else's are often filtered or whatever else the language is to make them look a certain way or, you know, present a certain way or present only a version of their life. And by the way, there's no fault in that. If that is their life, a livelihood and their life, okay. But we then compare ourselves to them. And that is these unrealistic standards of, oh my God, I should have this by the age of 30. And I should wear this by the age of 40. And I should look like this at the age of 50. We're not going to do that. Okay. And the thing is that when you have these unrelenting standards for yourself, you can't help but have those from other people. So guess what? you aren't just perfectionist. You're probably also very judgmental. Judgmental of yourself and judgmental. Sometimes we're like, oh, I have perfectionistic tendencies. And I'm hearing you have judgmental tendencies because you are judgmental of other people and of yourself. And that's really not in service of anything good, usually. So hold yourself to standards of excellence, but perfection, I'm sorry, like that's only going to hurt everyone in the long run. And then the number fourth reason why we have issues with self-love is these cultural expectations. And I already talked a little bit about that. What is a good wife? What is a good husband? What is a good mother? What is a good woman? What is a good man? What is a good father? Like, who decided what is good? I actually wondered that. And it began my own individuated journey of motherhood. Like, who decided this? Like, if the love needs are met and the food needs are met, who decided that the mother should be the one cooking? What if the mother doesn't know how to cook? And it actually is like a punishment for these children to feed them my food. Like, who said that it should be that way, you know? So it really makes you think, like, wait, hold on a second. Who set up these standards? Like, what if the father is a better chef? And sometimes I've seen that, like, maybe the guy is a better cook than the woman. Like, why didn't he cook for the kids? Why is he only cooking at, like, weekends or barbecues? No, maybe it should be your job because you're just better at it. Like, who decided this? You can tell I have a feeling about that. So who decided what is a good wife? And I know every culture has their own version, but like if the version can change from culture to culture, then you know what? There ain't no such thing as capital T truth in that department. So I will define that. So, oh my gosh, we are now at time. So I was supposed to tell you guys about how do you overcome challenges. Maybe I'll just keep going. Is it okay if I keep going? I think I'm at the hour. Is it? Yeah. Are you guys good with this? Can you guys give me a thumbs up? We continue or we go next week? I mean, I'll probably come back next week to talk about the same thing. Yeah, we keep going. Okay, we keep going. All right. So some people asked me for techniques. What is the technique? Like, what is a technique of loving another person? I don't know what that means, actually. Like, I don't know what a technique would be. But I know people want hacks and tips and tricks, but there's no shortcut to love. There's no shortcut to love. You have got to put in the time and the energy and the care, and you've got to be with that person, and you've got to understand that person, and you've got to be curious about that person. You have to accept that person. You have to sacrifice for that person. All of these things are about how you love another person. And that means then you must accept, you must do that for yourself also. So the first thing that I would say to keep in mind is the self-awareness part. Like I said, you can't love what you don't know. And if you know yourself superficially, then you love yourself superficially. If you know others superficially, then you only love them superficially. And then when you see them for their truth, then you don't love them anymore. And like, you know, maybe that's why some people don't want to know themselves, because they're afraid they won't love themselves. But only good can come when you bring that part of you that you don't love so much, compassion and forgiveness and care. Okay, so when society kicks on, so self-awareness is so important, because as you pursue your truth and as you pursue your intuition, as you pursue your dreams, all the things that we would want for someone that we love, as we do that for ourselves, there will be plenty of judgment that comes our way. And when that judgment kicks on, your inner critic is going to pipe on too. See, I told you, or your saboteur is going to kick on. you never should have done this. Why did you do this? I told you not to do this. You were fine in that job. You should have stayed where you were. Like, that's going to kick on. And then the self-aware, wise adult will say, thank you guys, but I'm going to keep moving. This is important to me, and this is part of the journey, and. So self-awareness is going to be very important. Now, how do you cultivate self-awareness? Maybe I'll do another live on that, but I will just give you one thing to do. And just do this one thing, okay? Well, maybe two things. Pay attention to your thoughts and your feelings and your behaviors. And I'm not saying you need to sit there and analyze things. Please don't, okay? Pay attention and be curious about the things that trigger you and the things that excite you. These are two portals into your inner world that are very quick. Sure, if I sit with myself, thoughts will come, and then I'll grab one thought and I will go in that direction. But that takes a little bit of effort and time to get to be with yourself in that way. Maybe you don't know how to be with yourself in that way, but we all can get triggered and we all can get excited about something. And that's a quick portal in. You can do shadow work from that space. You can learn about yourself from that space. You can learn about your expectations. You can learn about how you usually respond to such situations. You can learn how to self-regulate when you get triggered. You can learn about all the different versions of you that kick on when you are triggered. Maybe the saboteur is there. Maybe the critic is there. Maybe the rebel is there. I mean, there's so many versions of me that all stand at alert when I make a mistake. And then I have to tell them all, guys, I got this. Like, chill. It's going to be okay. And sometimes I might actually say, all right, critic, your turn. And then the critic starts to talk. Oh, you sure? Okay, writing it down. Okay, now the rebel, you say what you need to say. And now the saboteur, you say what you need to say. And I'm writing all of this down. All right, thank you guys. And then I'm going to say, okay, let me now look at everything, all the different voices inside of me. And then I might say to the wise adult, what would you say? And then I would say to the magical child, what would you say? And everybody at the table has now said what they needed to say. And now the chairman of the board will make the final call as to how we will proceed. So then she will say, okay, well, these are the different lessons that you need to learn, because it seems like you've made this mistake now three times, which makes it a pattern. But these are the reasons why you continue to do what you do. So continue to do what you're doing. And now you're going to have to watch out for when someone calls you a name, because then you become like a dragon. And so when someone calls you a name, you need to excuse yourself from the room, because then you're really out of control. Like something like that. That type of experience will happen. So trigger or excitement. Enter the portal through that into your inner world, where you will learn what it is that you need to learn about yourself, your habits, your patterns, and what you need to change. The second thing I would say is you've got to be honest with yourself. Like, this is really hard, like really hard, okay? And it's the hardest, it's the toughest for me, because shame is so debilitating. It is debilitating. It's suffocating. It's disintegrating. I mean, I don't know what word to use to describe the experience of shame when it is truly felt in the body, not just an idea. I've been through that experience, and whew, let me tell you, that was not an easy one. And this is because shame is so disintegrating and debilitating. We would rather not be honest with ourselves. We would rather blame the other person. We would rather say, well, he made me do that, or she called me that, so that's why I did that. Like, there's a million excuses that we will come up with for ourselves, but never for anyone else, because we cannot be honest with ourselves. So be honest with yourself and be ready for what comes forth when you are honest with yourself. And at that time, you're gonna have to soothe. You're gonna have to self-soothe. You're gonna have to breathe deeply. You're gonna have to kick on that wise adult and you're gonna say, everything's gonna be okay. And I know you made a mistake. I see that you made a mistake. Everything is gonna be okay. You are so safe. We're gonna make this right. We're gonna make this right. Like, breathe, breathe. At that time, I can't do any of the shaking and movements. At that time, I'm literally just soothing myself and holding myself and saying, I'm going to be okay. You're going to be okay. I usually speak in the language of you because there's a part of me that's so scared in that moment. And I'm engaging the wise adult in me to do the work. Okay, this is basically the essence of inner child reparenting. Call it whatever you want. But it's basically to say, I see you, you're a good person. This was not a good thing that you did. We're gonna make it right. Hold yourself, love yourself, be with yourself, okay? So being honest alongside with self-soothing when the shame kicks on. And then lastly, it would be very important that you cultivate self-compassion. And that means high expectations and high support. What are the values you choose to live in your life? Hold yourself to those values. Please don't tell me that you hold yourself to the value of kindness and then be mean to everyone in your life and, you know, and then not apologize for it. Like, of course, we all have our moments of meanness, but that means you hold yourself to the highest values and then you take accountability and say, I'm sorry, that was very unkind of me. I'll do better next time. And I'm sorry I hurt you. And it was not, it happened and I was not in control of myself. And I did not come to you from my highest self. And I'm sorry. And not, well, because when you said that, I got triggered. No, this is about you holding yourself to your highest values, not you holding them to their highest values. This is about you taking accountability for yourself. Okay? And that's it, guys. So there was so many questions. So I'm probably going to do a part two of this by just answering some of those questions. I'll probably answer some of those questions on my live today as well. And if you have questions here, I hope they show up on the other chat, but drop them into the story that I have today, and then I'll make sure to answer them next time. Thanks, guys. It was good to be with you guys today. Take care.